Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, we have Ask Me Anything, and your questions come from you guys emailing us, freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. So do that right now. Email us, freedom@charliekirk.com, and we have a pretty amazing episode. We are tackling all things history, secular, trends throughout our country, and much more. So email us, freedom@charliekirk.com, and make sure you guys are subscribed to the Charlie Kirk Show. Type in Charlie Kirk Show to your podcast provider and enjoy this Ask Me Anything, where we cover lots of different topics and answer your questions so you guys can continue to fight the left and win. Email us, freedom@charliekirk.com, and enjoy this amazing Ask Me Anything. Thanks to you guys emailing us.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
All right, Charlie, first question. If you could moderate a debate between two historical figures, who would they be? And two contemporary figures, who would they be?
Well, if I were to moderate a debate, that's a phenomenal question. I would love to moderate a debate between people. Well, first of all, Plato and Aristotle would be a lot of fun because they literally wrote against each other. Aristotle wrote against Plato, and he was a student of Plato. And I think that would be fascinating to see their differences of how they viewed the world and viewed natural science and viewed the nuclear family and viewed the individual. If I were to also choose another couple people, I think it'd be really interesting to moderate a debate between Jesus Christ and Nietzsche. I think that'd be very interesting. Have him say, God is dead. Be like, no, I'm alive. If you get the joke, you're laughing. I think current, let me think. Like just people who are alive today? If I could moderate a debate between two people who are alive today, if I were if like two people had to debate and you kind of wanted them to go up against each other, I think I would love to see Bernie Sanders, go up against probably one of the best conservative intellectuals that we have, kind of around, and we have plenty of them. I mean, I think Bernie Sanders against Ben Shapiro would be kind of enlightening. I think that would be kind of fun. I think Bernie Sanders against any one of the top guys that we got. Mark Levin, Bernie Sanders against Mark Levin would just be fun. That would be amazing. But I think there's a lot of great combinations. Let me think who else. Between two historical figures of people that just really would have not seen eye to eye on things. I would love to have the founding fathers just to get their analysis of where things are today. I think that would be really fascinating. Just to kind of be able to see, like, have Thomas Jefferson come back and be like, wait, this thing actually worked? No, I'm totally kidding. And he's like, what the heck did you guys do with this? Totally kidding, of course. But Thomas Jefferson versus like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez would be hilarious. That intellectually would not be fair. Let's just put it that way. There's plenty of debates that would have happened. I think that the debate that I always love the most, though, is kind of secular leftist humanism versus individual Western civilization defense. I just love that kind of that debate wherever it happens.
All right. Next up, what is the difference between a non-interventionist and an isolationist? Which is better for our country?
Well, they're actually quite similar, but they're different. Look, an isolationist is Switzerland, okay? So here's how it works. You can be an isolationist and a non-interventionalist, and you can also be a non-interventionalist but not be an isolationist. Does that make sense? Okay. So, for example, Switzerland is both isolationist and non-interventionist. I am more on the side of not being an isolationist, but I am on the side of non-interventionism. Okay, so what do I mean by that? So isolationism is the Switzerland model, which is our concerns stop and end right at the bridges going into Switzerland, and that's it. We have no needs, wants, and desires to ever go outside of the shoreline. We live in a very complicated world, and America's role in the world generally has been a positive all across the board. I think the fact that we have military bases in Japan is a good thing. The fact that we have military bases in Europe. America is the first successful, benevolent superpower in the history of the world. I want you to understand that. America is the first superpower that does not go around the world taking land from people, that does not go around pillaging and plundering and conquering, but instead tries to strive for liberation. Now, with that being said, I think under that doctrine, it gets very, very messy and very complicated, and in fact, distracts from the nation state if we pump our chest out with hubris and think all of a sudden we can displace sovereign nations and play a game of risk, especially in the region of the Middle East. Good example of American interventionism, World War II and the Korean War. World War II, it goes right up against what Augustine and Aquinas talked about with just war theory. Are there innocents being slaughtered? And if innocents are being slaughtered, then you have a moral obligation to interfere and to intercede. That's exactly what happened in the European theater. Now, some people ask all the time, what do you think, what if Pearl Harbor was never bombed? Should America have gotten involved in World War II? Absolutely, yes. There were Jews that were being innocently slaughtered in Europe, which therefore goes into the just war theory. I do not believe you sit idly by while innocents are being slaughtered. Now, unfortunately, there's innocents being slaughtered all across the world. So you have to say, well, what's the threshold? What is the line? Well, that's something that has to be debated amongst our elected representatives. Do you have the capacity to intercede? Do you have the capacity to be able to make positive change? Do you have a path to victory, or are you just going to be displacing one regime for another? So, in the World War II case, you had a existential evil that was conquering an entire continent. That without American intervention, you can make the argument that they might have eventually worn down the United Kingdom and taken over London. Now, there's disagreement amongst a lot of circles about that, but they were darn close. I mean, the Luftwaffe was flying over London for weeks and months on end, and not until an American counteroffensive through the western shores of France did we actually finally be able to get pushback against Germany. So there were a lot, and the Korean War is another great example of successful United States military intervention. So I traditionally am a non-interventionist, but there are times when you have to say, okay, that's a proper use of force. We created South Korea because 30,000 Americans died in the Korean War. You would not have the entire country of South Korea if it wasn't for the United States of America. Now, bad example of American intervention, the Vietnam War. Foolish and stupid. Completely unnecessary. No victory in sight. It was messy. It bankrupted our country throughout the 60s and 70s. And guess what? It did not bankrupt us financially. It bankrupted us in a way that not enough people talked about. It bankrupted our country psychologically. The draft, the horror, the suffering, and a war that Americans did not want to fight to just do what? To try to push back the rise of communism in Southeast Asia, a region that Americans did not care about. Another really bad example of American interventionism, Libya. I'm going to get to Iraq in a second. But Libya under Barack Obama, engaged in regime change under Muammar Gaddafi. Libya is a complete and total disaster right now. And of course, the gem of them all, the worst foreign policy decision in American history, the war in Iraq. And Congressman Crenshaw and I debated this at length in the previous episode of The Charlie Kirk Show. Go back, download that, and of course, make sure you are subscribed to The Charlie Kirk Show. But the war in Iraq was one of the stupidest decisions in American history. And when I make these critiques, I'm in no way criticizing the soldiers or the infantrymen, the sailors, or the Marines that fight so hard and so courageously and with so much valor. That is not what I'm saying at all. But the war in Iraq was a waste of money, a waste of time, and a completely displaced region. So I take a more restrained position on foreign policy. I'm not a dove. I'm not someone that believes we should completely and total dismantle the United States military. But I believe that regions should be paying more, countries should be paying more for our essential presence in the region. Japan and Korea should be paying us tens of billions of dollars a year. They're rich, and they have vibrant free market economies. We are literally paying for their protection against China. Germany. Norway has a $1 trillion sovereign wealth fund. We should tell Norway they have to pay us $50 billion, or we're going to tariff them and if not sanction them. We hold all the cards here. We have the most sophisticated weaponry. And by the way, we are the defense force of the entire European continent. Europe has been delinquent on paying for NATO for the last 30 or 40 years. And the only reason that Russian aggression has slowed over the last 15 years since the creation of NATO is because of sophisticated American weaponry and the American flag flying in bases in eastern Germany. That's the only reason. Norway, Sweden, Finland, Denmark, which spend basically nothing on any military at all, are safe and rich because of the United States military. So guess what? Norway has the largest sovereign wealth fund in the world. They should be pitching in billions and billions of dollars for all that we've done to allow them to sleep nicely at night, to sleep peacefully at night. And guess what? In World War II, Finland is where a lot of fights happened between Nazi Germany and the Soviet Union. A lot of fights. So those areas have been put in contest for quite some time. And you have the Baltic states, Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. Those are, a lot of those are quote unquote ethnic Russian states. These countries should be chipping in a lot more towards our defense. And I think that we get a lot better deals on a lot of what we're purchasing from some of these defense contractors. And so I do not want to see a further escalation of conflict in the Middle East. It worries me tremendously that we're going to continue to be in a region of sand and death that will further bankrupt our country and will lose thousands and thousands of American lives for no reason other than the continuation and the wrongful held position of pride to say that we always have to retaliate against some maniac that launches missiles against the United States of America. So I want to talk to you about this great product, and all of you guys need it, and it's a really good product, and it's Tommy John, and they make underwear, and it's the revolutionary clothing brand that's redefined comfort for Americans everywhere, including me. Look, they're innovative, they're smart about what they do, and they're very comfortable. They obsess over every little detail and stitch by using proprietary fabrics that perform like nothing you've ever worn before. Look, no one wants to talk about it, but everyone needs it. You guys need good underwear. Tommy John is so confident in their underwear that if you don't love your first pair, you can get a full refund with their best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free guarantee. If you prefer to shop in stores, you can find them in over 1,200 retail locations across the country, including Nordstrom stores nationwide. Tommy John, no adjustment needed. And again, they obsess over every little detail and stitch. Men's and women's underwear, it has a real comfort and stay put waistbands. And they give the three F's about your underwear and upgrade with Tommy John today. You know what those three F's are? Fabric, fit, and function. So right now, hurry to TommyJohn.com/Charlie for 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/Charlie for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/Charlie.
All right, Charlie, next question for you. How do we deal with an overly secular Generation Z? An entire generation that seems to be removed from the teachings of Christ, or any religion for that matter.
So I believe one of the biggest lies being taught to young people is the hyper-secularization of our culture, which is that you can find meaning in the freedom of your own choices. Now, look, I believe firmly in individual freedom and liberty. I believe people should be able to make whatever choices they see fit. But as a Christian, I know inevitably if people make choices that are inconsistent with the law of Moses and the teachings of Jesus Christ and the instructions within the Bible, they will end up being miserable and their life will end up being not productive and eventually be in the same cycle of sin, lack of repentance, so on and so forth. So the big lie that is being taught to young people is that you can do whatever you want to do, however you want to do it, whenever you want to do it. You're the most important person in the world, and that is what is going to give you fulfillment and happiness. This is nonsense. The Bible teaches you the exact opposite. The Bible, first and foremost, in the Ten Commandments, if you look at the Ten Commandments, it doesn't say what you should go do. It says what you cannot do. This is really important. It starts from the negative. It actually says, thou shall not, thou shall not, thou shall not, thou shall not. Now, why would God give Moses rules in the negative, not rules in the positive? Well, it's because we're broken by original sin. And that's one of the things the Bible articulates through the story of Adam and Eve. And it's consistent all throughout the Bible, that every single prophet, minor and major prophet in the Bible, it is articulated and shown that these individuals will commit sometimes major sins, minor sins, but they're always in the pursuit, in one way or the other, hopefully, of redemption or growing closer to God. And every single person has a different story of how they essentially embody that or maximize that. But Jesus is the completion of that struggle, is how do I grow closer to God? How do I redeem myself? And Jesus, of course, is, well, I am God, and you commit to me and you accept me, that I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. However, you look at the hyper-secular culture right now put forth by the left. There's a many, many really dangerous things that come out of this. Number one, the more secular a country or a culture becomes, the more potentially socialist and leftist that country comes. So people need to fill that void of a yearning for a higher power as something. And a lot of times they will fill that with government. Oh, I mean, I don't believe in God, but government can feed the hungry and clothe the poor and take care of people in need. Why can't government do that? That's the first problem and something that really needs to be addressed. But number two is that people will not be able to find a consistent moral order. If there is no God, right and wrong is merely an opinion. I'm going to say that again. If there is no God, right and wrong is merely an opinion. Therefore, is it okay to murder this person or not okay to murder this person? Well, that's just a matter of an opinion or consensus. If you believe in a God and a higher moral order, these things are not up for debate. They're widely accepted. universally accepted as being the teachings that should determine an entire country or civilization. And so this is what's so important. If you get rid of the idea that there is a higher moral order, then all of a sudden you'll disagree on your morality all the time. Where do people get this morality from? Now, people like Sam Harris will say, well, you get it from the natural world. That's where you get it from. You're able to observe it. We know it instinctively. And that's, of course, complete and total nonsense. I mean, for example, do you ever have to teach a baby to cry? Do you have to teach a child to lie? Do you have to teach kids to steal? They do that stuff naturally. You're broken by your original nature. You have to teach goodness to the child. You have to teach ethics. You have to teach values. You have to teach morals to that child. And within them is that battle between good and evil. Now, the really good stories in our country and our culture articulate this. And I give this speech quite often at Turning Point USA events. And I'm going to give a reminder to our team. I gave this speech at the Eastern Regional Conference in the fall of 2018. So if you guys can go back and dig it. Not for this episode, though, just in future episodes, where I talked about the stories that built Western civilization. You want to know the story that built Western civilization? Everyone listening to this podcast should live this story and should know the origination of this story. It's the hero's journey. It's basically a biblical story. You know the hero's journey? The hero's journey is this story. Someone grows up in less than desirable circumstances. They go on a path that is essentially the road less traveled. They create a team around them that reflects different moral stances and circumstances and skills and talents. They overcome different periods of peaks and valleys and adversity. And finally, they realize that the true struggle is not what is external. It's not the bad guys outside the gates. The true struggle is within. Now, what story did I just articulate right here? The three biggest stories of my generation that I grew up watching that were the most popular. Harry Potter, Star Wars, Lord of the Rings. Let's break it down. Frodo Baggins grows up in less than desirable circumstances, basically raised by his uncle. Harry Potter, raised by his uncle. Luke Skywalker, raised by his uncle. Weird how that always works, right? The Shire, place of innocence. Tatooine, place of innocence. Underneath a staircase, a place of innocence, literally. Then a grandfatherly-like figure that represents God or the highest level of authority comes and takes that person out of that comfortable circumstance, right? Obi-Wan Kenobi, Gandalf, or in the Hogwarts example, not as well built out, but eventually it's Dumbledore. Basically, Dumbledore is the one that sends the letter that basically takes him out. That person is a godlike, grandfatherly type figure that says, here are the rules for the road of what is right and what is wrong. Don't screw it up. Goodbye. And then they kind of disappear for a little bit, right? Whether Obi-Wan being killed, Gandalf being killed, or Dumbledore being killed. It's weird how like all these stories are basically exactly the same, right? Well, it's because the morals are the same. And this is good. These stories are actually really good for people to realize. What else did I say? They build a team. Well, they have to build a team between 3 to 4 people. Because that's actually basically in your real life. That's about you. If you have more than 3 to 4 friends, it's not true. You might have 3 to 4 people you know, but you really have 3 to 4 close friends. Hopefully one of them is your wife or your husband, and then maybe 2 or 3 other people that you really trust. Well, let's look at the Lord of the Rings example. Frodo, Sam. Okay, that's it. Then maybe Pippin and Merry. That's about it. Kind of that Hobbit group. By the way, you want to talk about absolute innocence? You could not create a character that embodies innocence more than the Hobbits. Like, they're literally 3 feet tall. Total innocence, right? No skills, so no ability to fight back, just total and complete innocence. Remember, the Shire is something that is so peaceful, hasn't been touched. Same with Tatooine, same with underneath the staircase. You have to create that image of innocence for people to be able to buy into. Harry Potter, well, Harry quickly creates a team. Ron and Hermione, and a couple other characters that kind of fill in here and there, right? Star Wars, Luke Skywalker needs to create a team. Well, he gets Chewbacca and Han Solo. Now, always remember, there is the voice of reason and the adventurer. That's always what happens in these teams, right? So who's the voice of reason in the Star Wars? Well, interestingly enough, Luke kind of splits the middle. Han Solo is totally the adventurer, right? Like, we're going to do crazy stuff on the Millennium Falcon. We're going to throw this thing upside down. The voice of reason is actually Chewbacca, which is hilarious because you can't understand what he's saying. He just kind of yells the whole time. Now, some people can make the argument the voice of reason was Leia as she inserts herself into the story, The New Hope. But she plays multiple different archetypes throughout Star Wars. Harry Potter, the voice of reason is Hermione. Ron is kind of the adventurer, but he's kind of also plays the court jester. If you want to go, like, play Wizard of Oz, plays the Scarecrow archetype. By the way, go back to Wizard of Oz. Wizard of Oz is exactly the same story. What's the story of Wizard of Oz? Dorothy goes on an adventure outside of her comfort zone, creates a small team, ends up facing her greatest fear and her evil herself. Okay, it's always the same. It's the same story that built Western civilization. Anyway, here's the big point, though, right? In all three stories, Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, Star Wars, what is the climax of the movie? The climax of the movie is they face themselves. How does Harry Potter, how does J.K. Rowling brilliantly articulate the struggle within? Literally with a scar on Harry Potter's head. Like, literally. Like, this is what I'm fighting. The evil is within me. And that's like battle within myself. Like, oh, it hurts. And what about Lord of the Rings? Putting on the ring. It's the voices in Frodo's head that is the true struggle within Lord of the Rings. Now, there's so many other stories going on in Lord of the Rings where you have Aragorn, who represents the return of Jesus Christ. And we're not getting into any of that stuff, okay? We're just keeping it very, very simple. We could do a whole other podcast on biblical imagery throughout Hollywood. And then finally, which other story did I not... did I say Harry Potter or no? I said Harry Potter. Star Wars, yeah, of course. Luke Skywalker. What is the battle for Luke Skywalker in Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi? The dark side. He's fighting the temptation to go to the dark side the whole time. And remember that Lord Palpatine, who kind of comes up and down in every single one of these movies, who represents Satan, of course, right? And Satan facing ultimate good. Remember, Jesus, Satan, wilderness, 40 days, they had it out. What did Satan do? He brought him up and he said, yo, I can give you the whole world, man. It's like Satan didn't try to kill Jesus. He knew that was not going to happen. He's like, no, but I can bring you away. I can make you fall like I did. Fallen angel, right? I can make you fall. I'm going to give you the whole world. Exactly what they did to Luke Skywalker. I'm going to give you everything. Just come to us. Come on. I'll give you everything. Same with Frodo Baggins. That's why Frodo Baggins actually was a fallen character archetype. He didn't try to destroy the ring. It was Sam who represents the archetype of the fellow companion and the moral check and balance that hopefully inserts itself in times of crisis. That's what Sam represents and kind of the best friend archetype. Okay, what does that all mean? These morals that built these stories that we all love, why do we keep on going back to watch Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings? Why? There's other stories of better motion graphics, maybe, or better special effects, maybe, maybe not. It's because the stories resonate with us at such a deep level. It's because it makes sense in an unconscious way that 99% of the population cannot articulate. It's because we see these stories happening every single day. And we see the same struggle that's happening, like, should I go out and drink tonight? Or should I not go out and drink tonight? Because I know if I do, then I'm going to have a price to pay for that indulgence. But if I don't, it's like me overcoming and not putting on the ring. But if I put on the ring, I could have extra power. I can live invisibly, so on and so forth. The more secular we get, the more we get away from these stories that built our great civilization, the more we get away from a vibrant, generous country that's the greatest country in the history of the world. Are you guys struggling with student loan payments? Perfectly understandable if you are. Well, you guys got to understand this service called Credible. Credible's great. What does Credible do? They get people out of student loan debt in a really positive way. Credible is an online marketplace that gets you pre-qualified student loan refinancing rates from up to 10 different lenders. They basically are able to have a consolidated marketplace that puts you as the primary focus. If you've got student loan debt, you could benefit. With a lower rate, you could save on interest or lower your monthly payment, which means more money in your pocket. You can consolidate all of your student loan bills in one place, and you get serious peace of mind. Credible customers have given awesome reviews about how much better their lives have been after refinancing their student loans. On Credible, you see actual pre-qualified rates from up to 10 lenders, whereas with some online marketplaces, you'll get a range of rates or ballpark estimates. It only takes a couple of minutes to check rates. Checking rates doesn't impact your credit, which is a huge bonus. I hate when people check my credit and all of a sudden, just to try to be able to see a rate on something, it's very frustrating. Credible, that doesn't happen. They're so confident that they'll have the best rates, they'll literally give you $200. You refinance your student loans at a better rate elsewhere. They never sell your data, which drives me nuts, so they won't spam you with phone calls from dozens of lenders. So right now, please visit credible.com/Charlie, that's credible.com/Charlie, C-H-A-R-L-I-E. Fill in a couple pieces of information to check what rates you are eligible for. Again, that is credible.com/Charlie. Refinance your student loans and start saving. So right now, if you guys have student loans, go right now to credible.com/Charlie, credible.com/Charlie. There is a path forward. Believe in it. Do something about it. credible.com/Charlie.
All right. This will be our last question. Charlie, what is the greatest threat facing America in the next 100 years? Where do you see the state of the nation in 2120?
The greatest threat facing our country over the next 100 years, there's a lot, but is how quick we are to dismiss God and the Bible from our culture. The national debt is huge. China is big. But if you lose a connection to a higher power, we will be obliterated. The biggest problem facing our country is we don't teach the Bible in our schools anymore. People think that there is no God. They think they are their own God. There is this humanist, atheist, self-righteous, narcissistic strain of leftism that has infiltrated our schools, where children are now being put into the ridiculous task of choosing their own gender identity at age 3 or 4, which is an absolutely ridiculous thing. For example, children, first of all, are in a state of vulnerability and confusion, and parents are the guardians of those children to make sure they make well-informed choices. But if a child goes into the middle of a street and starts playing with its truck, it is the parent's responsibility to pick the child up and make sure it doesn't get run over by a car. Parents get involved all the time in children's decisions, so child freedom is nonsense. Say, oh, it's my child's choice that he's a girl and he's 7 years old. Well, okay, no, he's a biological man. Tell him to stop eating the grass, playing in the street, and playing with dresses and say, that's not what you're doing. Now, if someone is like 18 or 19 years old and they think they're a woman, that's a completely different thing. Okay, first of all, that's a problem that needs to be addressed through hopeful mental health counseling and things of that nature. But children in general, children do things that are that don't make a lot of sense, that are morally inconsistent, and parents need to be the guardians of them. You look at all these things, all these threats. We're getting away from teaching the Bible. We're getting away from being a Christian nation. We're getting away from being a moral nation. And you look at the amount of abortions in our country. I mean, people say, oh, we need more immigrants. We need more immigrants. We need more immigrants. Well, maybe if we didn't slaughter a million of our own citizens in the womb every single year, maybe we wouldn't need more immigrants. Maybe immigration wouldn't be a problem if we didn't have an abortion problem. Like maybe we could actually have closed borders. Maybe the reason we can't have a wall is because we have a million abortions every single year. Maybe that's why we can't. Maybe the fact that people need all the cheap labor from across the world is because we've terminated 50 million of our citizens over the last 50 years. And they're directly related. Abortion and immigration are directly related. Abortion is the number one cause of death in America. Number one cause of death. The place where children are the most vulnerable is in the womb. What all this is a sickness of what? Is a sickness of not teaching Christianity and the Bible and the roots of our country. And if you think you're going to turn your back on God and he's going to have our back when we need it, you got another thing coming. It's the biggest problem over the next 100 years. Thanks so much, everybody. And if you guys want to get involved with Turning Point USA, the nation's largest and most powerful student organization, go to tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Thanks so much for the support, everybody, of our show. Give us those 5-star ratings if you can. Till next time, this is Charlie Kirk, host of The Charlie Kirk Show. Thanks so much.
There are things that should not be. Copycat killers. They exist. Those who are compelled to turn bloody fiction into a real-life horror story.
He was inspired by the Joker.
They do it because the acts give them power and control.
The license to kill.
Life imitates art. And unfortunately, so does death.
Reels and Podcast One, who brought you Murder Made Me Famous, comes the next great true crime podcast, Copycat Killers. Join host Dr. J. Buzz Von Ornsteiner as he analyzes true crimes based on Hollywood hits. New episodes every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.